You know, I've heard from so many people throughout my life where, you know, they're doing something that's like, oh, I've got my singing lessons on Wednesday nights, and holy fuck, I don't know what would happen to me if I didn't have that.
Yeah, yeah.
If I didn't have pottery, yeah. If I didn't have, you know, if I didn't do this thing, like, it's just, it's the thing that they look forward to.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, because you get to be creative.
Yeah.
Because your humanity is tied to that creativity, and you don't even understand it. You know, and I think that I'm starting to get, like, fired up and lit up now, because it's just like, yeah, like, to be human is to be creative. And it's just, it's so heartbreaking, you know, to hear people just like, oh, I'm not creative. And it's just like, you, like, then just say that, oh, well, I'm not human.
This is Way of the Artist with Brandon Colby Cook and Evan Schulte.
Exploring the challenges of the creative call.
So that you can claim your own path.
And make your life a work of art.
All right. Ready, ready, ready. Let's do this. Podcast time. We're just diving into this one. There was no preamble, no pre-chat. But then Brandon reminded me before we started that I was introducing this one. So sometimes when we're jumping into this, it's like, oh, there's like a little bit of a feeling of pressure of how are we going to, when we're just doing these ones where we jump in, what do you say? Because sometimes that lead-in is really, that's the thing that kicks things off. So I just very quickly, it's like, well, what's something that jumps to mind about something maybe related to the kinds of things we talk about on here? And what came to my mind was I had a chance to visit with some really, really good friends of mine who I haven't had an opportunity to catch up with in a very long time. You know, like, these are friends who I used to see every week, kind of a thing. And it's been, you know, I've seen them, but not that good, intimate kind of time. And so we were catching up on some stuff. And just in catching them up on, you know, sort of some of the things that I'm doing and whatever. And I started talking about acting. And I started kind of ripping on how so many directors don't understand acting. That's not necessarily the thing that I want to get into. I don't know, maybe you want to get into that, Brandon. But I was getting into it and describing some real world examples of where certain scenes, shows, movies, where if the director had understood a little bit more about performance and acting, they could have really helped some of these actors out, especially since the particular example, I'm not going to name names here, but the particular show I was talking about had a lot of, you know, pretty young green actors in it. And it's like, oh, if you just, you know, a director who has a bit of an understanding of performance could really get into this. And as I was going, they just said, like, man, why aren't you doing this? Like, you're just lit up right now. Like, I was fired up, and you know, and I was just thinking about, you know, that's sometimes those moments of someone catching you when you are in that place of fired up passion, and how much of a gift that is when someone reflects that back to you and makes you take notice of that. Because I was like, oh yeah, that's right. I am doing the thing. I am doing the things that I think I'm supposed to be doing, because that's an indication when other people are getting caught up. And these are people who are not really involved in these fields at all, but they were caught up and swept up in what I was just because of my own passion. And so that was just, I don't know if that's a subject, I don't know if that's a topic, but that was just a thing that jumped into my mind just to start this thing off with. So I don't know if that gives you anything to go with, Brandon.
Yeah, definitely there's something there. I do want to talk about the directing thing at some point, but let's actually kind of go more where you were pointing it towards, which is getting caught talking about something that you're passionate about and having other people get enrolled or on board with your idea. I think all great businesses start from something like that. I think usually someone's like, man, this, you know, there's this problem in the world or there's this thing. And if only somebody did this, and like, what if that somebody's you? I think that's always a good question. Like, so, you know, for the audience members out there, and maybe for yourself too, Evan, is going like, if you get aggravated about something, you go, man, the world needs more of this, or it needs this thing, or there's this problem and no one's ever confronted it, and maybe you're the person to do it. And I think it's always good to ask yourself is, could it be me? Could I be the one? You know what, like I went through a period in my life where I was very lost and very confused, and I didn't know if I even wanted to be in the film industry anymore. I didn't know if I wanted to be involved with it. I tried some different things. I went on some adventures, and oh man, I tried jobs that were totally the polar opposite. And like I worked for a steel company for a while. I learned to drive a forklift. I did a whole bunch of different stuff. And what was interesting is when I was working at the steel companies and all of that, what was very interesting about all of that was that I ended up coming up with TV shows and ideas about these places. And I would tell people, but I'm like, this would be a great show. And I'm like, you know, you got these wacky characters that work the night shift, this thing or whatever. And I'm just like, and people were like, that's awesome. And I'm like, you know, and then people who I was working with were inspiring me. And it just kind of kept coming back to this. I love creating story and I love characters and I love all of that. So in a way, I found my way back to it by doing something polar opposite, because once I started talking about it, I realized people were getting excited about the stuff that I was talking about. And that was a cue that, yeah, okay, maybe I don't want to leave necessarily the film industry. But I will say this, I've been in the film industry for probably, I think, 25 years now. I've been since I was a kid. And, there's things about the industry that really piss me off. Like, they really get under my skin. They get floated. Like, this is just the way it is. This is the way the industry and the business of film works. And I'm like, I strongly disagree with that. I don't think it works that way. And I think maybe it did for some time. Maybe there's an element of truth to that. But this whole schmoozy, I was thinking about this. You pointed out something the other day, like an authentic brand. And I was like, what the fuck is an authentic brand? Your brand should be you. That should be real. If you have to say authentic brand, then that means that you go under the assumption that brands are not authentic. That's why you'd have to call one authentic, right? And so I was thinking about this, like the film industry is filled with that type of shit, where it's like, your authentic brand. Let's find your authentic. How about you just find my fucking brand? You know what I mean? Like, why do I have to pretend to be anybody? Why can't I just fucking show up? And then, okay, I'm getting a little lit up, but you see what I'm saying? The other thing too is like, for the actors out there, I think you can brand yourself, but it doesn't have to be you. And I think this is a really important thing, because I think there's this communication out there that you somehow have to kind of like, almost like be the thing you're doing. It's like, you don't have to do that. Like, I know a lot of people, like for me, I booked a lot of roles. People thought, you know, as like a drug dealer or like a surfer or, you know, a drug user, this type of stuff. And that was like so far removed from what I was. Like, maybe a little bit of surfer was true, but not really. And then I definitely wasn't a drug dealer or a drug user. I was like nowhere near any of that stuff. But I would get these roles and I had a bit of a look that could pass as it. And what I learned at a certain point was that I would get more work if I kind of just leaned into that a little bit and dressed the part, you know, wore the maybe the leather jacket or the disheveled stuff, grew my hair out, grew a little scruff, this type of stuff would kind of, you know, it would get me into the room. It would open up opportunities for me. So I think, I think what I found for me was that I started by helping people make films because people wanted to make films, but then it became a little bit more of my mission wasn't really just to help people make films and tell stories. It was, I want to help you navigate the film industry in a way that's more truthful to you, and not, I don't want you to buy into the schmoozy bullshit or these ideas of what the film industry is supposed to be. And I think a lot of people think it's that way, and so they show up that way, but I don't actually think it is. And I have a lot of people, they'll just thank me because they get to like relax a little bit. You know what I mean? And you meet these people in the industry and they're authentic brands and shit. And you're like, yeah, but that's why you're not authentic, because you're trying to be authentic. That's what isn't authentic about it. It's like authenticity kind of, you can kind of have self-awareness, but there's a certain part of you that just is going to come out. And anyway, that's, I think, what I'm getting to at the end of the day. When you're talking about what you're talking about, getting people lit up who aren't even involved in the industry, you're being authentic. But how are you going to know that's what you're being? You don't see yourself being you, right? So authenticity, I think, comes from not how do I look to the world, but more like what's coming out of me that's true.
Yeah, that just makes me, you know, and this could refer this more to acting and, you know, our last podcast as well, talking about, we were talking a little bit about identity and the present moment and these kinds of things. And it's in those moments where you get caught up in something,
yeah,
right? Where, and within acting, I always say it's like, you know, getting, I don't necessarily use the words caught up, but it's still completely appropriate. I'll say like something is happening to you that's out of your control. That's very much part of what I think art is about, and certainly acting and performance is like, how do you set the stage for something to happen to you that's out of your control? And when you find yourself in that place where that happening is happening, right? And there's no self-awareness of yourself. There's no contrived, there's no curation of yourself that's going on. There's just this presence of you that is there. And that thing is more you than anything, right? Like when you're really you, you're so unaware of yourself. It's a really bizarre kind of phenomenon, and performance is the same. It's like you're given a great performance when you're not aware of yourself, when you're not thinking about yourself, because that means your attention is on the other person. Your attention is on what's going on right now in this moment. There's no, because that in itself is so demanding, you know, and worth your attention, mm-hmm, that there's no space really for that other thing to come into play. And yeah, it's a funny thing how that works. And there was something that you said, you know, the whole thing of branding, because that is, I'm not going to say that there isn't maybe some utility in terms of getting yourself roles and stuff like that, in terms of really giving a casting director a strong idea of what you can play. Now, any actor should always aspire to being able to play anything, because that's what, in a way, you should want. You know, it's like you want to do all kinds of stuff and stretch yourself in all kinds of different ways. The utility of that branding stuff really comes down to a large degree, up and coming actors and young actors who are just, you know, you're trying to get your foot in the door. And so sometimes it can be useful to be like, oh, this person is great for roles like this, right? But I think that there's still something in there in that authenticity that I think it, you know, that fire thing and that fire and passion still comes into it, right? Which is, because knowing what people see you as is kind of important, and especially when it comes to acting.
Yeah.
Especially like it's knowing what people see you as is very useful. And in some ways you've got to still find where the fire is for whatever that thing is, right? Because that can be very useful in terms of what is that message that you're putting out about yourself? Because to me, that's really what branding, because I really hate that word to such a large degree, but so much of it is about knowing what you're truly, honestly about. Like, what is your fire? What is your passion? Because that thing has all kinds of unique flavors to it in ways that you might not even be able to communicate in a rational way, right? But there's some special sauce that's going on in that passion that is so uniquely and genuinely you. And learning how you message that, mm-hmm. right? To me is really what it's all about, is like, it's really just letting people know in the most effective way you can what you're truly about, genuinely truly about. And then at the end of that, you can call it branding if you want. Mm-hmm. I would kind of opt to not do it, because I find that that word can be such a trap for people, mm-hmm. because it can come from a place that isn't that passionate place. Like, it can come from a purely logical place, which I understand why we do that, but it's also riddled with pitfalls when you go that way, because suddenly, yeah, but you're putting yourself out there in some concept of what you think people want you to be. Like, that's kind of the worst trap that you can fall into with that branding, where it's just like, oh, well, you know, I really don't care about this, but, you know, I think that this is where I could be successful. This is where I could whatever. And again, I don't want to completely write that off, but I think that it's so easy to get stuck in that place. And if you stay in that place long enough, you eventually, like, there's something that starts to just rot inside you, you know, like there's something, you just start to become stagnant and you forget what you're doing there in the first place. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go back and find what it is again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think over identifying with anything, is there's always danger in that. I do think if you're going to try to move into the film industry and you want to have some success, you need to kind of find and pick something that you can be known for initially, especially as an actor, because, and there are some exceptions, don't get me wrong there, but not everybody can be the exception. There are some exceptions, but for the most part, you know, if you're looking at it strategically from a business point, I think what you need is somebody who's not going to blow smoke up your ass, but can actually say, yeah, I could see you in this part. I could see you playing this part. And you have to look at it, okay, like, why are people seeing me this way? Are they seeing me this way because this is like how I like look or how I present myself? Like, you could change your hair, you could change the way you dress, you could do a bunch of things, but how you naturally show up might be somewhat generic and boring. And so casting has a very difficult time trying to figure out where to place you, because sometimes they just need, like, they need a very specific, almost trope type of character. And if you're too in the middle of everything, they're going to go with the person a lot of the time that just looks and feels a little bit more like whatever that thing is they're looking for. And so you kind of have to, if you understand that, you can begin to get yourself in the door. And also, I wouldn't say it's just for young actors and new actors. Although I do think that's an essential part to actually just getting in the door and booking some parts. But for older actors, they can build an entire career off of just being kind of like the bad guy, you know, or being like a certain type of thing. I think that, I mean, being in the film industry for 25 years, the novelty wears off. That's the best advice I can give you if you're like super excited about the film industry, is that what you're excited about today, just being on set, being in a movie, being on a show, all of that seems awesome in the beginning. But after a while, it all just kind of becomes like anything else. It all just becomes a job. And then you want to do more fulfilling work. And the other thing too is, you don't realize, because right now just getting a part is super exciting if you're new, but your colleagues, people you know, they're going to start succeeding in ways that you're going to want to succeed. And if they're going to grow and evolve themselves and you're not, you're going to fall behind. And you know, the longer you're in the film industry, especially when you're a kid and then you grow up as an adult in it, you begin to see certain people drop away and you get to see certain people take flight. And there is a, you know, if you're not, like, if you're looking at it and you're like, there is a bit of luck, there is a bit of kind of, you know, knowing the right people. There is elements of this. People have different careers. They take off at different points in different ways. But the thing is, if you don't expand yourself, if you don't open up your options, like, you might be able to play, for example, you might be able to play the young drug dealing surfer guy like I was in the beginning, but like, I'm not going to play that role now. That's just not going to happen. There's no way they're casting me as that. Like, it's just, I don't even really fit the part. I could try, I could do my best, but the thing is, it's just, things have changed. I've changed, right? If I even wanted to do that. But there's a time in your life sometimes when you have an opportunity and you have a window, and you know, and there is definitely some, I definitely had some looks, you know, for some stuff. I got some parts, but I definitely had some looks. And that's the thing about having a career. There were lots of people that were jealous of me because they weren't even getting a look. And I didn't necessarily, my looks didn't necessarily, like, I'm not talking about my physical looks. I'm just talking about those opportunities didn't necessarily transcend into a big, you know, leading acting career. But, you know, there's other factors that are at play, right? Like, maybe I had too much insecurity. Maybe there was other things going at play. Maybe I was trying to control too much. Maybe I wasn't letting go enough. You know, there's other elements at play. But I think when it comes to this branding thing, like, people are trying to navigate the world, and if they can't go, okay, categorize, that's what this is about, that's what you're about, they don't know what to do with you. And if they don't know what to do with you, generally, with all the options out there, they don't do anything with you. So I think it's important to consider that you're doing that strategically. You're choosing something to work. The other thing I wanted to say is just one other thing. I don't think you can ever know yourself. I don't think you can actually have, like, I think what we think of as authenticity is like, I know what I'll do. I'll figure out what my ego is and then I'll identify it and that'll be me. And it's like, that isn't you. You're not your ego. Your ego is like a mask you wear. Like, whoever you think you are is just a mask. It always is a mask, because in my opinion, and look, this might be my opinion, but the way I see it is, you're an infinite creative energy. You could be really just about anything at any time. And sometimes you're going to have an easier time being one thing than you will have be another, but you have the resource inside of you, an energy expression that could be just about anything. So if just because you've been being an energy expression in a certain way doesn't mean that that's you. It just means that you've been putting your energy that way, and you can change that. And so, but I think that we live in a world where they go, oh, you tend to show up this way, so that's who you are. It's like, no, just because you showed up even 100 times that way doesn't mean that the next time you have to show up that way. But we live as though, oh, I've already done this pattern, so I guess I have to keep doing this pattern and that's me. And it's like, it isn't you. And also, one last thought. Who says that you chose that pattern? You might have got cast into that pattern. Like, somebody put you in that role and said, oh, you're this way. And then you just lived up to it. There's this whole thing, you know, we used to talk about this a lot when I was a kid about labeling. Be very careful about labeling, because once people take a label, they end up living up to it. So don't call a kid a punk, for example, was a big one when I was younger. Don't call a kid a punk, because he'll live into being a punk, because people end up getting cast in the labels that we call them. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very careful. If someone said, hey, you're this way, you're that, or they called you a name or a label, don't identify with it. Especially if it's not serving you, because it actually isn't you. It's just a mask. It's just an ego you're living into.
Well, that's quite the can of worms that you're opening up there, Brandon. Yeah. Quite the can of worms that you're opening up. Yeah, I think that, you know, I always find it so fascinating that is it the word ego? Oh, no, no. It's persona. That's right. It's the word persona, which is like the Greek word or whatever. But persona and ego are often, I don't know anymore. I know back, like they were kind of interchangeable types of words, but persona, the actual original meaning of that word is mask, right? Just the thing. And just touch on what you were saying about, you know, yeah, we do have sort of infinite capacities within ourselves to show up in so many different ways. Daniel Day-Lewis has a pretty famous quote about that, you know, where it's that acting is a celebration of that we contain within ourselves infinite possibilities. And I agree with that, although I might put an asterisk on that because it's like, yes, however, there's something that's still in your nature,
yeah,
that you don't necessarily want to work against that thing, you know, which is why, you know, coming back to that whole thing of fire, passion, where do you get lit up, excited, whatever, you know, follow your bliss, follow your excitement. Where those things come in is because it's like, well, that's showing you something about what your nature is. And so don't fight the nature that you came into this world with, right? Because there's something so innate and, again, so unique about it. Even though you might share the same passion with someone else, maybe you share the same passion with millions of other people. But when you follow your passion and how it speaks to you, how it calls to you, and where it calls you to go, that's still a unique path that evokes a certain voice from you that no one else can duplicate, mm-hmm. at least not credibly duplicate, mm-hmm. right? And there's those rare souls that come along and they are so embodied in their own nature, and it can become so tempting that we want to be like that person, right? We want to, because they're speaking to us in a certain kind of a way, like they're hitting that thing that wants to be unique and original, but then we make the mistake of like, oh, I'm going to start acting like that person because they're so unique and original, and you're fucked. Because it's like, well, that's not how you're unique and original. That's not how you are in your nature. That's how someone else is, right? Continue following that thread that you've been given. And it's always, you know, we talk about it, it's a visceral emotional place. It's not necessarily a logical place, you know, and that's where the artists go. That's where the artists speak and communicate is from a place that isn't bereft. I think I'm using that word correctly. That isn't bereft of your intelligence and your intellect, but is not, the intellect is not the thing that's leading the charge for an artist. At least I don't think so. Like in great art, it's led by the heart, or it's led by the soul, and you don't necessarily have to take that literally. You can take that, you know, the metaphorical, but there is a capacity, there is a part of human experience that is attached to, right? That is kind of beyond that thing, whatever you want to call it. And that is such an incredible guiding light, North Star, in terms of, I think, how you find yourself in a way. But following that passion, following that thing and trusting it, I think is a big part of the challenge for the artist, because we live in such a, I guess, left brain, to put it in another way, like in such a left brain driven culture, and one that seems to value that more than anything else, which, don't get me wrong, it does have tremendous value, but it's only one side of the coin, so to speak. And, you know, this is almost like heading into a territory of like the value of the artist and what and what they do. But, you know, there is tremendous value to the artist simply by the fact of when you look at how much art we're constantly engaged with, you know, even in our mass media, music and movies, TV, probably the biggest ones there. I feel like I'm just waffling about now, Brandon. So I'm just waffling. I'm just saying shit. So I'm just going to stop. I'm just going to stop and pass it on to you.
You know, I was thinking as you were talking about that, I was thinking anything to escape the machine. And I was thinking, you know, that's what we're all doing. Like, it's like we all engage with the machine of like society and this is how things work and whatever. But like, we always are doing these things to like escape it. You know, it's like, yeah, I go to work and I make my money and I buy the house and I do the things and all this stuff. And that's all this machine, right? And it's like, and then you like, give me some reprieve, like give me a break from all of that. And, you know, again, mental health, depression, stress, anxiety, all this shit is like skyrocketing now. And it's like, well, yeah, that's machine. That's what the machine does to you. It makes you stress about fucking things that aren't real. Like, and they feel real. Like, time and money feel very real. But money is not real in the sense that it just represents something. And the same with time. It really just represents something. And that's when you're so in the machine, you're like, well, what do you mean? What does that even mean? Well, there's a thought for our audience to go off and like ponder, like really ponder that. The thing is that people will say things like, oh, I don't have enough time. It's like, well, we all have the same amount of time in the day, but it's what you choose to do with it. And it's how you choose. And they go, well, I can't, it's easy for you to say, you know, I work all, well, who chose to do that? You know, who chose to give attention to their children or not give attention to their children? Who chose to be disciplined? Who chose not to be disciplined? Who chose to do this? You did. But people walk around like they're a victim to all this shit. Like, you're a victim to being broke. You're a victim to not having enough time. You're just, everything is just outside world, inside. Like, outside world controls me. And it's like, the artist and the creative mind flips that. It does it the other way. It goes, you can't force this to be created. We might take 3 months. We might take 3 hours or 3 minutes. And you're just going to have to sit and wait with me while we do it. And that's just what it is. And if you're like, I'm on a schedule, I got to create within X amount of time, it's like, well, good luck with that one. That's machine talk there. You know what I mean? So I think there's this this overindulgence in the machine is why you feel depressed, anxious, stressed, incomplete, unhappy, all of that stuff that's going on. It's because you're embracing the machine too much. Listen, I love certain machines. They're great tools, right? But like, don't make your whole life that, you know? I think the thing is that we have a thing where we subjugate the artist right now. We're in a time where, you know, we consume more art than we probably have ever consumed in all of our existence. And yet we subjugate it like it's nothing. It's like, well, yeah, well, that's just this over here. And it's like, yeah, that's fucking your whole life, man. That's everything. That's like, if you look at most of your life, it's really about the art and it's about the creativity. And if it wasn't about the art and creativity, life would be very bleak. But you make it about the machine. You make it about the got to do the work, got to make the money, got to do the thing. And all that shit is actually really secondary. And the thing is you've duped yourself if you give up the things that matter for things that are in the machine. Like, if you make money more important than hanging out with your children, for example, you missed the fucking mark, man. Because the money and the job, none of that shit is going to matter. You know what's going to matter is those relationships you have. And you know what's going to matter is that trip you took. And you know what's going to matter is that thing you did where you created it or you did it or that moment you shared with somebody. That's what's going to matter. And at some point on your journey, I hope you wake up to that and you realize, you know, that this stuff that you're making the priority is not what matters. And by making it the priority is exactly why you can't have it. If you make money your master, you'll always chase it forever. You'll never have enough. But if you make money a secondary to what's important in your life, you'll find that money comes in ways that you don't. Like, I'm not talking woo-woo shit here. This is reality. The reason why is it works very simply. Because when you aren't chasing money, you're actually trying to create something of value. You're trying to do something in the world. Money comes to that. The reason why is what is money? Like, okay, let's just kind of like look at this for a second. Money is a representation of work. It's a representation of energy saved. It's value. It's whatever. Where does money come from? It doesn't fucking come from trees. Money comes from people. So you want to be wealthy, you better fucking figure out how to get along with people, because people have money. That's where money comes from. Yes, money can make money, but like, that's a whole other fucking stage of this. Don't even worry about that. If you're not at the stage where you're using money to make money, money doesn't come from money. Money comes from people. So build your relationships, enhance your relationships, go out in the world, do things, become a fulfilled person, become somebody that people want to be around, become somebody that gets excited about shit that they can enroll people in, you know, become that and money will come. But if you chase money, money's empty. There's nothing in money. Money's just, it's like chasing a measurement. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. But that's what the machine does. It gets you to chase measurements. It gets you to chase things that aren't real. And yet we live in this world and we use this like left brain kind of idea to like be like, yeah, well, this is just how it works, you know, and I wake up at 4 a.m. and I go to sleep at 2 a.m. And, you know, it's like, yeah, but that's not why you're successful. You're successful because you're out there interacting with people, creating stuff, building stuff, adding value, like, or at least you're convincing them that you are. But it's through that. It's not through, you know, and you know, I mention my dad every now and then because he pointed out some things to me growing up that were very important and very useful. But one thing he said to me, and I always remember this, he said, you know, in half an hour, I can make what most people make in a day. And he's like, sales, learn how to sell. It's true, man. In an hour conversation, I can make as much money as some people make in 3-4 months. I can do that right now. And the thing is that's because I live in a different reality than the machine, because 1 hour conversation can open up a door. Now, granted, there's other work and there's things that are involved in that. It's not as simple as 1 hour conversation. It's not 1 hour conversation and you're done. But the thing is, the idea is that if you think time equals money, then that's the machine working. Like, you're saying like, oh, these measurements. It's like, that's not how it works. It doesn't work that way. It's there is a creativity to everything. And I'm not just talking about money. Also, you can buy yourself time. You can do anything you want. But if you live in the machine, the thing is what I'm saying is like, anything to escape the machine. That's what I was thinking as you're talking. I'm like, that's what the artist is always after. They're like, I want to do the thing I care about. I don't want to have to do this other thing that like I trade my time for money, or I do all the artists I know, like every one of us at some point was like, oh man, I just can't wait. But it's like, yeah, you're going to be on set working 16 hours a day, but all of a sudden that time doesn't matter anymore. Of course it does. But all of a sudden it's like, no, I got a day on set. It's a day on set. You don't talk about the 16 hours you work. You talk about the great day on set. But yet you go to your job and you talk, I had to do an 8-hour, 12-hour, 16-hour shift or some shit, right? But when you talk about when you're on film, because these artists, they love it when they're in the film industry, they talk about, I got 5 days on set. They're all celebrating. I got all these days. They want more of it. More time. And then when you have to leave, you don't want to leave. See what I'm saying? Time and money are not real. Not the way you think they're real. And I just think it's anything to escape the machine. It's the thing that keeps going through my head. It's like, you don't want to suffer for 8 hours a day. You want to enjoy 8 hours a day. That's what you're trying to do. Right? So anyway, I don't know. That was my thought.
This is a very elaborate thought, my friend.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that you brought this thing. Sometimes this term of the machine comes up on our show because it's a pretty good description of things. And I actually just finished reading the short story called "The Machine Stops" by a man by the name of E.M. Forster. And this book was written in like the 1910s. And just listening to some of the things you're saying, like just because I've been unpacking the story a little bit. And it's interesting because lots of other stories have come along that have touched on some of these elements and themes that are in there. But one of them is this thing of, you know, because it has a lot to do with technology. And, you know, technology can be an incredible thing, useful, helpful, life-saving thing, and creative when we are being wise and intelligent about it. But one of the things that this book explores about sort of technology and the machine run amok is that there's a tipping point in which human beings are no longer running the machine and the machine is running us. Mm-hmm. And there's probably some very, you know, more literal ways in which we can see how this unfolds. But one thing I thought was interesting is that, and this was something that was brought up, who did I hear this from? I can't remember now. I wish I could and give them some credit. Oh, I think it was my friend Kai, our friend Kai. He might have said this to me. He was and we've had him on the podcast before, actually. And he's got his bachelor's in economics. And he said something to me about how our economic system is a technology, right? And he was saying that it's a data technology. And it's interesting because we don't often think of systems like that as technology, as a machine, right? But they are, and they start to run our lives, right? So much about the systems that we've created, there's many ways in which we've benefited from them, but there's a lot of ways in which we, I think, struggle and suffer as a result of them too, right? Just the simple kind of low-hanging fruit example of this is, yeah, being stuck in, you know, a 9-to-5 job that you hate, right? That's kind of like, that's a technology that you're stuck in. It's a technology that's running you, mm-hmm. right? That you're so caught up in and involved with. And the other thing that happens is there's a loss of our humanity and creativity. And I think that those things go together, because I think to be human is to be creative. And it's, in a way, it's like no wonder why so many of us are anxious and stressed out and just don't have outlets, you know, or we have to go and seek creative outlets. So we even talk about it, but it's like a side thing. Yeah. You know, it's just like, no. You are a part of this machine. You're in this machine. That's your main function. And in whatever time you have left and time and energy that you have left, you can go and do this thing. And that little thing might be the most important thing that you have in your life. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard from so many people throughout my life where, you know, they're doing something that's like, oh, I've got my singing lessons on Wednesday nights, and holy fuck, I don't know what would happen to me if I didn't have that.
Yeah, yeah.
If I didn't have pottery, yeah. If I didn't have, you know, if I didn't do this thing, like it's the thing that they look forward to.
Yeah.
Because it's like, yeah, because you get to be creative.
Yeah.
Because your humanity is tied to that creativity, and you don't even understand it. You know, and I think that I'm coming. I'm starting to get like fired up and lit up now because it's just like, yeah, like to be human is to be creative. And it's just, it's so heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking, you know, to hear people just like, oh, I'm not creative. And it's just like, you, like, then just say that, oh, well, I'm not human. Mm-hmm. I would dare to take it that far. Is say it's like I'm not human. So that's, and it's like that, but that should feel stupid to say that.
Yeah.
That should feel so ridiculous to say that, right? So it's like, are you human? Yeah. You're creative. You're creative in some way.
Yeah.
Maybe in some way that's even a mystery to yourself at this point in time, yeah. Right? But find out. Find out what that thing is, and I'm gonna save my comments because I know we got to wrap this one up here. So I'll stop it there and carry this with me, my closing comments. But I think maybe we should talk about the beer. Brandon, you provided this one today.
Yeah. Well, I will share the beer. I just want to say one thing. Some people might have expanded on their creativity in ways that you haven't, and I don't think you should say you're not creative simply because other people are doing it in a way that you don't know how to do and you haven't worked on. But I was thinking about sports. You know, I used to play a lot of sports, and I just want to say this one thing is that sports are very creative. And I think if you're an athlete, then you're probably pretty creative because you have to find all sorts of creative ways to outdo your opponent and figure out how to score and do all this kind of stuff. So it's not as far away from us as we think. That's my point. Okay, this beer. This is a grapefruit ale by Whistler Brewing Co. I think we have had this one before. But I really like it. I've always liked it. I got it because it's delicious. And I think it's such a great like summer or like just a nice day beer. It really tastes good. I don't know. Like I think they found a good balance with grapefruit and beer combo where it's to me, it's ideal. They did it just right. So yeah, Whistler Brewing Co. Well done with the grapefruit ale. Evan, you had some closing thoughts, so I'll just pass it to you and then maybe I'll see if I can come up with something.
Yeah, I guess I'll just pick up where I left off. Yeah, that to be human is to be creative. And, you know, I'm sort of just sifting through some of these thoughts right now as I'm speaking. So it's all. Somewhat of a work in progress here, but yeah, you know, I just think of even things like people who love to garden, you know, and getting your hands in the earth and the dirt and touching real live things, or, you know, we talk about hiking, getting out into nature. These are things that they are so vital to us, and we are so reverent, so many of us, about doing these things. And maybe because we don't really understand it to a certain degree, but it's like, yeah, because there's nothing about that, the machine that's there. Mm-hmm. The machine isn't in that soil. The machine isn't in those trees. You know, that it's there's something pure in there that connects us to something that is so important to us. It brings us into a creative state, you know, and it's not surprising that a lot of people have their most creative ideas when they're out for a walk in the woods or they're out in the garden. They're doing things that are not full of these abstract concepts that we are just consumed by. That we're typically, our minds are so occupied by all the time. Oh, I got to think about work and this thing, and then there's this bill. I got to pay my taxes. I got to, you know, like there's like, and there's just like, oh, in the car, I got to get gas in the car. Like there's just, yeah, these things have certain functions and certain useful functions. I'm not trying to just knock everything about our modern world and society because it has given us so many things too, but it's certainly not perfect. it certainly, there's a lot of problems that it has presented us with, and how in so many ways it seems to be directly, it at times can be so directly aimed at our creativity and by extension our humanity. Mm-hmm. That's something that I'm really going to be paying attention to, I think. Like, I'm going to be really looking out for, like, as I said, like, some of this stuff is just, I don't know, there's something that's just percolating inside me right now that yeah, we've got to be very, you know, I don't want to say not afraid, but we need to have boundaries. We need to find boundaries within ourselves of what we give to the machine, right? What is our relationship to the machine? How much do we want to be a part of that, right? Because it's not just all bad, but how much are we being used by it as opposed to us using it, right? And where do we need to find those spaces for us to be connected to our nature and our fire and things which are have nothing to do with the machine?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, this has been a good conversation. I feel like because we just jumped into it, you know, these types of conversations, they go on a wild ride and you're like, what are we talking about again? But I do think, you know, to come back to our central point that we started with, and I don't know if this is really the point of the conversation or not, but just to bottle cap it, you started by talking about being lit up about something and kind of like passionate about it and other people being like, yeah, that's something, there's something about that. I think that I'd like to leave the thought with that the machine is not bad. It's just that we use it badly, right? It's just like we become like, I like that you pointed out that the machine is first there to serve us, but then eventually we just end up serving it. And I think that you need to kind of figure out that relationship, because I think if the relationship is serving you and you know, or at least it's equal, then maybe that's okay. But if it's just you're serving it, I think that's where you're going to get depressed. I think that's where all this angst and all this weird stuff is coming from in society. You know, and I think the thing is, you got to figure out like, well, what do you get lit up about? What do you get connected with? Like, and I think you got to either journal it or you got to share it with people. You got to, you know, talk about these things that get you going, and then, you know, and then sift through that. Like, what about that matters to me? Why do I care? What's relevant about that? Because sometimes it might not even be what you're talking about, but maybe the way you're talking about it, or, you know, it's sometimes like, I think the creative mind, it can read between the lines of things, and, you know, don't take yourself too literally. Like, if you're getting really lit up about something, it might not be the subject matter that you care about, but like the way in which something about the subject matter, the way in which it's being done, you know, so like be open-minded, be a little more flexible, I would say. Yeah. And I mean, I think just start tracking it. I'd say, you know, if I was going to give anybody some practical advice, and I think like what I can do and what I actually have done, but I think I'll just, you know, it's a reminder to keep doing it, is that when I was really lost and I didn't know what I wanted to do anymore, and I didn't know if I cared about certain things that I thought I cared about for a long time, I just started tracking it. I started paying attention. It's like, what do I seem to keep wanting to do, or what am I interested in, or, you know, and following passions, following interests, following curiosities, just go down that path, see what's there, you know, and all roads lead to Rome is very true. Like, what you end up finding is that you go, oh, I like this over here, and it just leads to the same place. And I like this over here, and it leads to the same place. And they go, what is that place that all these things keep seeming to lead to? And there's something in that. And then you got to kind of figure it out. And it's not even clear then, but you just kind of make something out of it, you know? And then you might find out that that thing was just a stepping stone to the next thing. It's not the thing, and don't get frustrated about that. So, yeah, I mean, it's been a good conversation, man. I mean, there's a lot to chew on. So chew away, folks, and thanks for joining us. And yeah, and just start tracking what you're passionate about. And you're human, so you're creative.
Thank you for listening in on our conversation today. We hope you found something helpful that you can carry forward with you. Head over to our website, wayoftheartist.com, for more free exclusive material and learn about the show. If you haven't already, please support us by subscribing to the show, sharing it with people you know, and keeping compassionate, creative conversation going.